back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do.
Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set is back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes. Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And we welcome you into Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com this Tuesday morning, November 20th, 2012, as the Giants are back from the bye, and they now turn their attention to the Green Bay Packers, who pulled into a tie for first place in the NFC North as the Bears lost to the San Francisco 49ers on Monday Night Football last night. Not a pretty game for the Bears defense, as Colin Kaepernick, filling in for the injured Alex Smith, just tore apart that Chicago defense, which has been one of the most opportunistic units throughout the course of this season, but San Francisco had no problems. And it's just another example of sometimes how the NFL could just be unpredictable, and how even the good teams in this league can have bad games and all of a sudden the standings can turn like that. So Packers and the Bears tied for first in the NFC North. The Giants have a one-game lead on the Dallas Cowboys, and they are looking to build on some momentum and try to snap this two-game skid that has plagued them prior to the bye, as they welcome the Green Bay Packers to town at MetLife Stadium on Sunday. So we will continue to break down this contest throughout the course of this week here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow with you for the next hour. We are taking your phone calls. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow, last name M-E-D-O-W. And let's start talking about the injury report, as the Giants did get back to practice yesterday. Some positives: Ahmad Bradshaw was able to take part in practice. He's been dealing with those neck and foot injuries, so that is a step in the right direction. Clearly, we won't know exactly how far he's come until Wednesday, when Tom Coughlin gives his full report, and whether or not Ahmad Bradshaw could get out there for more than just one day. I think that's obviously a big storyline for these next 6 weeks. And Bradshaw has the track record of fighting through injuries, but you figure with 2 weeks under his belt now, perhaps he can get on the field for more than one day, and I think that should help get this offense back on track, because clearly what you do on practice can translate into games. And the fact that he's only been able to get there one day on the field, I think, has affected the running game somewhat. It's just one factor in play. Clearly, the play of the offensive line has also contributed to some of their running woes. But they need to find a better balance between Andre Brown, Bradshaw, maybe find ways to work David Wilson into the mix moving forward. But it really starts and ends with Ahmad Bradshaw. He's the Giants' workhorse. He's not going away. They need to continue to feed him the ball. They just need to find a better way to work those other two running backs into the mix so that they can wear down opposing defenses and catch them off guard. That is going to be key, I think, during this six-game stretch. And you look at the teams that they're going up against, not very good at stopping the run overall. Really middle of the pack, 19th they're ranked and below, outside of the Redskins. Maybe it being in the top 10, they're going up against the 19th-ranked rushing defense that the Packers are going to showcase this weekend. Baltimore has struggled against the run. Atlanta has not been very good against the run, and neither have the Eagles. So they, at least on paper, I think will have opportunities to run the football, but it's all about the execution throughout the course of the next couple of games. We could talk about it till you're blue in the face, but the bottom line is they need to get out there and find the holes and get good blocking up at the line of scrimmage. That has been one thing that I think has been lacking. They have not been winning the battle at the line of scrimmage, specifically in the most recent two games against their AFC North opponents, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals. The other positive from an injury perspective, Akeem Nick spoke to the media, had a good game against the Bengals. I think they got him involved in some of the underneath routes, and he says that he's clearly getting more and more healthy each and every week, that the knee issues, the ankle injuries are behind him, and that he feels as good as he's been maybe prior to the injury that he had in minicamp. So that is certainly a positive. I think that that should help Eli Manning, and perhaps if Hakeem Nicks's production increases, remember, you get him to draw some double teams, that should open up things for the other receivers in play. The Dominic Hixons of the world, who did not practice, he's been dealing with an ankle injury. The Victor Cruises of the world, the Martellus Bennett. It all goes hand in hand. With respect to the defense, Kenny Phillips did get out to practice yesterday, as he's been nursing that MCL sprain. Perhaps things are looking good in terms of him getting out there for the Packers game, and maybe the Giants can finally showcase this three-safety alignment that could be a new wrinkle for Perry Fuel to utilize. Remember, he's wanted to throw that out there against the Bengals and the Steelers, and I think that will help them in the long run against tight ends. And tight ends have had a great deal of success against this Giants defense, mainly because they've been missing Phillips and they've been missing Jaquan Williams, who's one of their most versatile linebackers in terms of matching up against the run and matching up against the pass. And Green Bay has JerMichael Finley, who's been relatively quiet this season, but he had a touchdown against the Lions. And I think Aaron Rodgers and him have started to click after their bye 2 weeks ago. You can't underestimate a guy like JerMichael Finley. He was also hurt earlier in the season. And the middle of the field has been an issue for the Giants' defense. So with Kenny Phillips back into the picture, Jaquan Williams didn't practice. We'll have to see how he progresses throughout the course of this week. Maybe they'll have some more weapons to utilize to slow down a Packers pass attack, which is up there with the best of them in the NFL. I mean, they'll go four wide in the blink of an eye. They've got the weapons. And Jordy Nelson returned for the Lions game, so he's returning to full health. Randall Cobb, breakout campaign. He's no longer just a special teamer. I mentioned Finley, and they'll even utilize their running backs out in the flat for dump-offs if Aaron Rodgers can't go deep. Greg Jennings is really the only weapon that they're missing because he underwent surgery on his groin, and I doubt that he'll be able to return for this Giants game. I know Mike McCarthy will give a more detailed synopsis of his injury report later on in the week, and we also will be joined by Vic Ketchman of Packers.com at 10 a.m. Eastern. He'll help us break down the Packers and also give us a nice plot in terms of what the injury report is looking like with respect to Green Bay. They have a couple of notable injuries on defense. Clay Matthews has been dealing with a hamstring injury, their top playmaker in the linebacker spot, and BJ Raji, their nose tackle, who re-aggravated an ankle injury in the loss to the Lions. So if they're missing both of those guys, Raji clearly helps in terms of stopping the run, and Matthews is a terror in terms of getting pressure on quarterbacks and also stopping the run. They also bring him back out in coverage. So those are two notable weapons that the Packers are going to want in the mix against a Giants offense that has not looked like its normal self the last couple of weeks, but is still very dangerous. And opposing defenses, I think, still respect the Giants offense. I don't think the Giants offense has lost any respect across the NFL. It's just a matter of execution at this point and getting guys healthy so that Perry Fuel and Kevin Gilbride can have their usual suspects out there from game to game. All right, we'll open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We start with Nate in New York.
Twitter.
Nate, what's happening?
What's up, man? How you doing?
How we doing, Nate? What you got?
I'm just really depressed at the Giants right now. I think they could do a lot better, and they haven't showcased it. They really are a good team. Their offensive line needs to really work at it because they haven't been doing much. They've been letting Eli get sacked all over the place, and the running backs haven't had a chance at anything. And he really hasn't been able to throw the ball, really. He's a great quarterback, don't get me wrong. Like, I love the Giants, but he hasn't been able to showcase any of his talents, really. But it is November, and they're usually not that great in November, so I'm hoping for a couple wins. I'm hoping they beat the Packers for sure. That's going to be a good game, though.
And I agree, Nate, and appreciate the phone call. And you're right, the Giants' offense clearly has struggled, and it hasn't just been one facet. It's been all across the board. The offensive line, in terms of pass protection, Eli Manning has taken his fair share of hits the last couple of weeks. However, I think that you could also make the argument that Manning's decision-making hasn't been necessarily on point, and that has affected them somewhat. He'll be the first one to say, and he's talked about this to the media right before the bye, that there were a couple of hits he took in the Bengals game where the smart thing probably would have been to take the sack or throw the football away. Instead, he tried to flick it up the field, and as a result, it led to a turnover. So those are things that I think can easily be solved in terms of him just being patient and not always looking or having the pressure to feel as if he needs to make a play. And with respect to the running game, and I know we've been hammering this home a lot over the last couple of weeks, I think it's a combination of the patience of the running backs, meaning take what the offensive line gives you. If the offensive line is going to have a small opening, take it for 2 yards. The way running backs work in this league is it's all based on rhythm. You can't expect as a running back to constantly get 10 yards a carry unless your offensive line is playing out of its mind and really winning the battle at the line of scrimmage. So it's going to be short yardage situations more often than not, and you hope eventually, by wearing down a defense, you're going to get that big break, whether it be for 5 yards, whether it be for 7, whether it be for 15. It will eventually come. But in order to do that, you need to work for it. And the Giants at times have also been down in games. I think that's affected the game plan. Against the Bengals, they went down early. So they were essentially forced to constantly throw. Now, the one way you can get around that if your running game struggles is get the running backs more involved in the passing game. That is something that hasn't been too evident the last couple of games. Bradshaw could catch the football out of the backfield. Andre Brown, maybe not nearly as strong, but he has shown that he could do that as well. And David Wilson is a playmaker when you get the football in his hand. So maybe that's a new wrinkle that they'll look to bring back. You know, when DJ Ware was here, they always used him on third downs in that screen game. Just because Ware's not here anymore doesn't mean that the Giants don't have the personnel to run screenplays or get involved in the flat. A pass for 2 to 3 yards is just as good as a run play for 2 to 3 yards. So that would be something that perhaps the Giants offense has toyed with over the last 2 weeks to maybe implement to try to attack this Packers defense. This Packers defense is very good at bringing pressure. Their secondary has 12 interceptions, so they've been somewhat opportunistic. But if Clay Matthews is not out there, if B.J. Raji is not out there, you know, that takes away some of their big game changers. And the Giants, I think, need to attack those holes if those two players specifically are not out there on the field. Go back to the lines. We've got Mike in Richmond, Virginia. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys.
How we doing, Mike? What you got?
Good. Hey, I had a question for you, a little off topic, but
sure.
It's more related to the kind of how we always go through this kind of drought in November Giants fan. I kind of call them the heart attack hidden sometimes because that's how you feel and then you win a Super Bowl. But what do you think about my son had asked me the other day, I was wearing a throwback jersey to Taylor, and he asked me, which one do you like, the old Giants or the new Giants? And I thought about it, and I'm like, well, we did have 2 Super Bowls in the last 5 years. And then back then with Parcells, we also had 2 Super Bowls within about 4 years, I think. And while I think the old Giants were kind of defense, kind of boring offense, we've got this, you know, very inconsistent team, but exciting. So I was wondering, what are your thoughts? Which kind of team did you like watching as a reporter, the old Giants or these kind of the new heart attack kids don't know where you're going to get Giants?
Well, I think that the offense is a little bit more exciting. I would agree with you, Mike, in terms of Eli Manning, what he brings to the table, that they're not necessarily just a run-and-pound type of football team, which is a good thing, and I think they wish that they were a run-and-pound team right now because the lack of a running game is affecting the offense. But just clearly from watching the team on television, I think they're, you know, a lot more exciting to watch right now because of what Eli Manning brings to the table. They've got big playmakers in the passing game, and their defense is so opportunistic right now. I mean, their defense back in the day brought the pressure and was able to create turnovers and get to the quarterback, but now you have secondary players that can really change the course of the game, whether it be a safety or whether it be a corner. Well, the linebackers, it goes without saying. And I think part of that is they're relying on a lot of youth right now. There's not a great deal of veterans in play. I mean, you have the Michael Boleys and the Keith Rivers of the world, but Jaquan Williams, for example, you can make the argument is their most productive linebacker, and he's only in his second year with the team.
Right. All right, well, thanks a lot for your opinion on that. I was just curious. And let's go Giants. We got to get out of this rut.
All right, Mike, appreciate the phone call. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. And I know Mike's question was a little bit off topic, but what it brings to the forefront is the comparison of how this Giants team, in terms of their mantra and their identity, has changed a bit. You know, Giants fans are used to seeing the identity of this team be a very strong defensive unit that consistently got to the quarterback, stopped the run, and was really known for its running game on offense in wearing defenses down and not putting so much pressure on the quarterback. You know, letting the running game dictate the tempo. Since the Eli Manning era has come to the table, things have changed a bit. Now, the offense is really in the hands of Manning. And I think the whole league has changed overall. It's not necessarily just the Giants changing their ways. It's a passing style league right now. And the quarterback that they're going up against this week fits that example. I mean, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, they put this offense on the shoulders of their quarterback. You are not going to see them run the football. They'll run the football at times just to keep the defense honest. But specifically this year, with the loss of Cedric Benson, since he went down with that Lisfranc injury, Alex Green and James Starks have not been able to fill the void that Benson has left behind. It's been a huge issue. They tried to set the tempo with the running game against the Lions. It didn't work so much. And you can make the argument it took this offense out of sync. So they are going to put the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands, just as they've done in previous matchups with the Giants. That's why the big key this week, and I know we'll talk a lot about this throughout the course of this week, getting pressure on Aaron Rodgers. You look at their three losses this year, to the Colts, to the Seahawks, and to the Niners. All three of those teams managed to get in the face of Rodgers. The Colts got five sacks. And the Seahawks, remember, had eight in the first half alone. And we could sit here and argue that the Packers should have won that game. That's fine. But I'm looking at the trends here. The teams that have had success against Green Bay on defense have been the teams that have flustered Aaron Rodgers and have won the battle at the line of scrimmage to get past this Packers offensive line. And this Packers offensive line is missing one of its key notable players, that being Brian Bulaga, their right tackle. They've had a couple of weeks to fill the gap, but he's a huge loss because he was a veteran presence. So there are holes, I think, to attack on the Packers O-line. And if you can't get to the quarterback, you need your secondary to be well-disciplined because of how wide they spread the corners out. Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, JerMichael Finley. And are all three of those players big playmakers? And the Giants are going to need that three safety alignment, I think, as a means to slow this group down. We go to Mike in Long Island. Mike, what's happening?
Oh, hi. I wanted to talk about Ramsey's Barden. We both know that the red zone offense is horrendous. I don't understand why we can't develop a couple of plays, two, three plays, just for Ramsey's Barden in the red zone. I'm not talking about replacing Nix or Cruz. I'm talking about the third receiver, just for the red zone to have Eli pass the ball to a specific spot in the end zone where Ramsey's Barden could run to that spot. The ball should be there before Ramsey's Barden gets there and let him jump up and catch the ball. He's 6'6". There's no reason not to at least try and use those attributes.
Mike, that's a reasonable point, and I really can't argue with having a small package for Ramsey's Barden. I think the Giants have showcased that somewhat. Due to injuries, maybe they haven't turned to him as often as possibly they should. And I don't know if you listened to yesterday's show, because Ramsey's Barden seemed to be the big topic of discussion. I mean, we had a whole debate, at least 20 minutes, on whether or not Barden should be the notable third receiver. And I understand you're not necessarily making that point. And perhaps with the self-scout that they went through the last 2 weeks, maybe the Giants' offense looked at the tape, looked at how defenses are playing the Giants' offense, and said to themselves, we need to find a way to get Ramsey's Barden more involved when we're within the 20 because of the fact that we've settled for field goals too often. And that could very well be on display starting Sunday night against the Packers. I don't have the answer. I can't guarantee you that Barden's going to be out there for X amount of snaps. It's reasonable to think that, yes, with his size, with his big ability to go up and jump for the football, that they should use him. He's not doing any good for the team if he's on the sideline. But I'm not going to promise you that they're going to take some of their other playmakers out of the fold just so that they can get Barden into the mix.
No, I'm not expecting that. I'm just talking about a couple of plays in the red zone. And I know when Eli is off, I've been watching Eli a long time. When Eli is off and he's not, you know, really accurate, he throws the ball high. I've seen that so many times. Ramsey's Barden is the perfect one to throw the ball high.
And you're right, but what about Martellus Bennett? Don't you think that they have a strong enough target in Bennett in the red zone that he should be that big playmaker?
Well, everybody's talking about maybe Bennett is not 100%. Maybe his knee is still bothering him. He's not the same as he was the first few games.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Mike. And I know a lot of people share the same sentiment as Mike. that Ramsey's Barden should be more involved in the offense, and I'll reiterate what I just said. The whole point of the last 2 weeks, specifically the previous week, was for Tom Coughlin and the coaching staff, while the players had some time off, was to sit down, look at the tape of all of their first groups of games, and evaluate what they could do better on both sides of the football. Maybe Barden is one of those new wrinkles they'll look to work in. We go back to lines. Our good friend Ed in Maryland. Ed, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance?
How we doing, Ed?
I wanted to talk about the good job that Will Beattie's done. I know we're all talking about the right tackle spot and David Dill and Locklear and stuff like that, but I think Beattie's actually played well on the left side. He's been kind of quiet there. So I want to know if you think that's his job for the future. Then also, I was thinking about Michael Coe, and he had a hamstring injury, and Tom Coughlin decided to put him on IR, and it seemed like we always do this every year. We have a guy that shouldn't be put on IR, but we put him on IR just to free up a roster spot. And being that we only have four healthy corners, and to put Michael Coe on IR for a hamstring, and now we're going against Matt Ryan and Rodgers, these type of guys coming up, we only have, what, three cornerbacks healthy now? So I just wanted to know what their decision-making to put their third corner on IR, and if you think Will Hill, as a safety, will be playing more corner for the defense. And then the last thing I want to talk about is Keith Rivers. Through 10 games with us, he's only played 5 games, and now here he got an accident during a bye week. And I'm just starting to think like he's a little bit not serious about his job. You know, ever since he came to the league, he's always been getting hurt. Now he's came with the Giants trying to have a fresh start. And, you know, it's a hamstring, it's a calf strain, now it's a car accident. So I want to know about Keith Rivers' health, if he's going to come back and play this year, and do you think he has a chance to be with us next year, and about media and stuff. Thanks.
All right, you got it. I appreciate the phone call, Ed, as he touched on a couple of different subjects. Let's start with the latter one, Keith Rivers. Clearly, luck has not been on his side this season, and you were right. Tom Coughlin did address the media yesterday, mentioned that he was in a car accident out in California the other week, and he was having his knee taken a look at. I don't think that they're concerned long-term on the injury front. You have to look at it in terms of this. For what the Giants gave up to acquire Keith Rivers, I mean, that was a very good trade. You know, a fifth-round pick for a first-round pick who, yes, could not stay healthy when he was with Cincinnati, but the Giants had a need at the linebacker position. They wanted to gain a veteran presence, and Rivers has that versatility to run both sides of the football field, stop the run, aid with the pass. It just has not played out that way because of the health factor. That has been the most troubling aspect of his career. He just has not been able to stay on the football field. But I think that they still look at him as a key component moving forward, and that he's not done for the season. He will return. It's just a matter, can he put together enough games consistently where he can get through the contest? That's the biggest thing holding Keith Rivers back. It's not an X's and O's thing. It's not that they don't feel as if he fits into the scheme or the system. It's just a matter of him staying healthy. But he is definitely in the Giants' plans. With respect to Will Beattie, we haven't talked much about the left side of the offensive line, and you know what? That's a good thing, because the offensive line should not be a big topic of discussion overall. If you're not talking about the offensive line, that means the O-line is doing its job. The reason why there's been a lot of discussion regarding David Deal and Sean Locklear is because there's been some breakdowns on the right side. But I think Beattie's done a great job, and they had missed him, remember, last season when he was dealing with the eye injury. He solidified that position. I don't think that there's anybody threatening taking over that slot. So they are in good shape with respect to the left side. And finally, Ed was touching on the decision to put Michael Coe on IR to make room clearly for Will Hill, because he had just finished that 4-game suspension. And he was able to return for the Bengals game. You know, Hill's a big playmaker in terms of what he brings to the table on special teams. And that was another part of the rationale as to why they needed to sacrifice a corner to bring Will Hill back. Hill, remember, was a big game changer prior to the suspension in terms of forcing turnovers and also having the ability to get to the football at the right time. And you're right, they may use Hill in different situations in the corner. But here's the thing you have to understand with regard to putting Michael Coe on IR. The Giants long-term feel, with Kenny Phillips returning, Jaquan Williams returning, the play of Stevie Brown, and Antrell Roll, who can play in the corner slot, they're in a better position in being creative with how they use their safeties than worrying about just keeping an extra corner on the roster just so that maybe they can mix and match their packages. I think the key turning point to this defense this season could very well come Sunday if Phillips is out there and they're able to mix and match those three safeties. That's the key thing to keep close tabs on. Let's try to squeeze in a couple more calls before we get to Vic Ketchman of Packers.com. We go to Esau out of L.A. Esau, what's happening?
Hey, how are you, Smokey?
Well, doing well. It's Lance, by the way. What's happening, Esau?
Lance, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. What you got?
I wanted to talk about this mantra we got going coming out of the bye of a six-week schedule. You know what happens on the first game of the playoffs then? It's actually a 9 or 10 week schedule, depending if we get the bye. So you got to talk to them. Tell them it's not a 6 week schedule. That mantra, they're going to get a letdown if they keep going with that mantra.
Well, I mean, listen, they're going up against tough competition over these six games. And I know a lot of people have criticized the Giants for not necessarily always playing up to the competition. They tend to play down to the competition when they go up against teams that are inferior, specifically record-wise. But you look at this cluster of six games, maybe with the exception of the Eagles, because I still think the Redskins are a dangerous team, even though the record doesn't necessarily show that, that they're going to have to bring their A game. So whether or not you want to treat it, like you said, as a 9 to 10 week stretch, because you include perhaps if they're fortunate enough to get to the playoffs, they just need to take it with the old cliche, one game at a time. Because right now, priority number one, hold off the Dallas Cowboys. That's what the priority needs to be right now. Once you get into the playoffs, it's a whole new ballgame, as the Giants showed. They were a 7-7 team last year. And then everything clicked. They got healthy at the right time. Right now, the way this playoff picture is playing out, I don't know if two teams from the NFC East are going to be lucky enough to get into the playoffs. To me, it's the division winner or sit on the couch and watch the postseason. They control their own destiny. And that's the position you want to be in. They have a one-game lead on the Cowboys with six to go. They've already played Dallas. The season series is split. The last thing you want to have happen is for the tiebreakers to start to play a role in terms of who wins that division. So it's simple. Take each game 1 week at a time. Get the things right on offense that have been plaguing them the last couple of weeks and be in the mix to win football games. The problem with the Bengals game, they were really never in a position to win that contest. And appreciate the phone call, Esau. When you're not in a position to win a football game, it affects the play calling. It affects the strategy. And that's what hurt them with respect to the Cincinnati contest. When you're down, you're abandoning the run. They were not able to dictate the tempo of this game on the ground. But if you're going to look at this big picture, you can't look at who they're playing in Week 15. You can't look at who they're playing in Week 16. And I understand it's the nice, comfortable, you know, cliche to throw out there. All the players say it all the time. The coaches say it out there. But how can you look at it from that perspective? Take this, for example. If Dallas beats Washington on Thursday, pressure is going to start to build for the Giants. The Cowboys would go to 6-5. If the Giants lose to the Packers, it's a whole new ballgame with five games to go. That means both teams are tied. So I think the sense of urgency builds if the Cowboys win. But even if the Cowboys lose, the sense of urgency needs to be there, because the Giants then would have a golden opportunity to gain back that cushion. The momentum is there. I don't know what else you can put in front of the Giants right now to get them ready to play a football game. They've had 2 weeks to recuperate, rest, get back to full health. They've had 2 weeks to really reassess the situation of the team and right the ship in multiple categories. Maybe it was a blessing in disguise to get the bye this late. Last year they had it relatively early. This could be a really good benefit for the Giants. Not many teams get a late bye, specifically when they're on a two-game skid and they have plenty of work to do over the course of 2 weeks. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We are going to get to your phone calls a bit later on in the program, but we are going to be joined momentarily by Vic Ketchman of Packers.com to give his take on Green Bay. So for those of you on the line, I just preach some patience as we want to set the scene for the upcoming Giants-Packers game. They met twice last year, if you recall, as the Packers beat the Giants by 3 points at MetLife Stadium, and then the Giants got revenge in the postseason and then went on that run to ultimately win the Super Bowl. And to help break down Sunday's contest, we're now joined by Vic Ketchman of Packers.com. Vic, Lance Meadow here on Big Blue Kickoff. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
It's fine here. How about there?
Well, things are quite okay here. The Giants trying to recuperate after their two-week bye. And let's get right into setting the scene for this contest on Sunday, Vic, as the Packers, they started the season off 2-3, now riding a five-game winning streak. It really seems like things are starting to click. Haven't lost since week five against the Colts. What do you credit most to this turnaround?
It's on defense. Last year, the Packers finished dead last in the league in defense and getting worse. They were really, really in hard decline when they faced the Giants in the playoffs last year on defense, I'm talking. This year they've cut that number in half. They're 16th, or at least they were number 16 in the league on defense going into last night's game. They are number 2 in the league in sacks. And that is a dramatic improvement from last in the league last year. They were last in the league in several categories on defense last year. Their first 6 picks of the draft were on the defensive side of the ball this year. They've got young players that are making plays, especially rookie cornerback, defensive back, nickelback, Casey Hayward, who leads the team with 5 interceptions. So that's the difference. The difference is on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, they're not playing up to last year's standards, and that's why a lot of people think the Packers have yet to play their best football. Most people think the Packers' best football is still ahead of them, and that's what makes them, I think, will make them a scary team in December, as the Giants were a year ago.
Well, one new wrinkle on offense, Vic, has been the play of Randall Cobb. Really has emerged as Aaron Rodgers' go-to weapon. 6 touchdowns in the last 4 games. Why have these two been able to click so well?
Well, I think just about anybody can click with Aaron Rodgers if you can get open. And I think the answer to your question is opportunity. Greg Jennings has missed pretty much all the whole season, and Jordy Nelson has missed time, and they've lost a lot of personnel, which has, for a lot of games, which has given Randall Cobb an opportunity to be that guy, to be that man that Nelson was last year. Nelson and Jennings were the stars of the passing game last year when the Packers got the 13-0. And they've had to play without these guys for a significant portion of this year, and that's created the opportunity for Cobb. And he hasn't gotten hurt. He hasn't missed a down. He's always been there to be the man when they've needed somebody to be that player. And that becomes a kind of dependability that you establish with your quarterback, and he starts to look for you.
You mentioned that Randall Cobb has really emerged and filled the void left behind by the likes of Jennings and Nelson. Then there's also JerMichael Finley, who many expected to step up given the injuries. He's been relatively quiet, did have a touchdown against the Lions in Sunday's victory. How much did the bye help, perhaps, for Rodgers and Finley to get back on the right track? And can he be an X factor moving forward?
Well, Sunday was JerMichael Finley's step-up game. Some people here will tell you that he hasn't been the same player since the significant knee injury he sustained in the 2010 season that ended his season. That was the Packers Super Bowl year. All of a sudden, there has been a curious bout of the dropsies in the last couple of years. Sunday, he was more like the player that everyone has expected him to be. He made big plays Sunday, especially the 40-yard completion, which was a short pass and long run play in the game-winning drive in the final minutes of the game. He made plays on Sunday that have been expected of him, and now we're going to find out if that's going to carry over.
Talking with Vic Ketchman of Packers.com as the Giants are set to host the Packers at MetLife Stadium on Sunday night. Packers just 24th in the league in rushing yards per game at 99. And since Cedric Benson went down, it seems like they're still looking for someone to step up. They've used Alex Green, now James Starks. Vic, assess the running game situation for Green Bay, and how much do you think they'll turn to that against the Giants, given New York has struggled in stopping the run?
The Packers did something very different on Sunday for them. They ran the ball more times than they threw it, 29-27. That is not Packers football. And they didn't run it with a lot of production. But for the Packers, a team that wants to throw the ball, it's not about yards, it's about carries. And what that means is that when you can accumulate those many rushing attempts, you make the defense play run. You make them respect run instead of teeing off, pinning their ears back and teeing off on the quarterback, being able to rush the quarterback on every down. And what the Packers found out early in the season in their last two losses, the one in Seattle that should have been a win and the one in Indianapolis the following week, is that when they don't run the ball, they invite the rush, and they were sacked 8 times in the first half in Seattle, and they went completely dead on offense in the second half in Indianapolis. And it's no coincidence that in each of those two halves, they completely abandoned the run. Since then, they have committed to rushing attempts. I'm not going to tell you that their running game has been real productive, because obviously the ranking, 24th, says it isn't. But what they're getting now is a commitment to the run. They're getting rushing attempts that are making defenses have to play run as well as play pass, and that's helping protect Aaron Rodgers against the pass rush, and that is most important when you play against the Giants because of the rushers they can send at you.
So with that being said, Vic, how do you see the matchup playing out between the Giants' front seven and the Packers' offensive line, which has already lost Brian Bulaga, one of their top veterans?
I think the Packers are going to make the Giants play run on Sunday for the reasons that you just said. They've lost a tackle, so they're a little depleted up front. They've got an MVP quarterback who has to be protected, and a quarterback's best protection, best friend in protecting a quarterback is a running game. So I think you're going to see a real good balance between run and pass on Sunday. That's something the Packers did not have in that postseason game they lost to the Giants last year. Giants made them one-dimensional and then teed off. And, of course, in the third quarter, that's when sack, strip, game over.
Yeah, the Packers very uncharacteristic in that playoff game. 3 fumbles and 4 sacks of Rodgers. He also threw an interception. That was certainly a big turning point. And speaking of that playoff matchup, Vic, forget the X's and O's, putting that aside. From a mental perspective, how much is that loss still on Green Bay's mind? And how much motivation do you think that will play out as they head into this game Sunday?
I think it's on their mind. I think it'll always be hurtful, just as the Giants win here in the playoffs in the 2000 and what was that, 7 season?
Yeah,
7. That's part of Packer history. It's something that will. Mike McCarthy was the coach, and it's in his mind, and it's in the minds of the players that are here. Now, there aren't a lot of guys left from that team. Favre is obviously gone. A lot of the players from the 07 team are gone. But the guys from last year's team are still here, and that was a hurtful loss for them. The table was set for the Packers to win twice at home and defend their Super Bowl title, and the Giants ruined all of that. I guess that creates some motivation, but that motivation stuff, that ends the first time somebody knocks you down. you're not thinking about that, and you're not thinking about that postseason loss anymore.
Talking with Vic Hetchman of Packers.com as the Giants host Green Bay Sunday at MetLife Stadium. Vic, I want to touch on some injuries that have been plaguing the Packers, specifically on defense. A few notables: linebacker Clay Matthews, the hamstring, and nose tackle B.J. Raji, I believe, re-aggravated an ankle injury. What's the latest with respect to those two?
Don't have a clue. You know how coaches are. First of all, they're not going to tell you until they have to tell you, and then they won't even tell you then. So, and by the way, I covered Tom Coughlin's teams in Jacksonville, all of them. And if there's one coach who is more manic about hiding injuries than Tom Coughlin, I don't know who he is. It's just the way of the game now, nowadays. The injury factor of football and football today is enormous, and every coach is trying to protect the sanctity of that information to the point that they'll find players if they talk about it. So the last person in the world who's going to know about an injury is a reporter.
Well, let me ask you this. How much have they missed Clay Matthews? Because he was really a game changer, specifically against the Chicago Bears earlier this season.
They were able to overcome his absence on Sunday in Detroit, but I don't think it's something that you would want to have to overcome very often. He's the guy who makes the sacks for the Packers, and without him, they lose. They're without their best player, their very best player on defense. Maybe the Giants could get by with that because they've got so many guys that can rush the passer, but the Packers, you know, their pass rush is built on Matthews. They need him back.
Talking with Vic Hetchman of Packers.com. Vic, before I let you go, as you alluded to, that you spent a lot of time with the Jacksonville Jaguars, so you've been around Tom Coughlin, and my producer Dave Melroy and a lot of people around the Giants organization say that perhaps you have some good stories to tell about Coach Coughlin. Anything that you can leave Giants fans with before we say goodbye here?
Well, he's... I covered Chuck Knoll for 21 years. I covered Tom Coughlin for 9 years in Jacksonville. I've got Mike McCarthy here now for a couple years. And those are just three great coaches. Tom Coughlin, Chuck Knoll's got four Super Bowl titles, and Tom Coughlin's got two. And the last time I talked to him, I said, two more to tie Chuck, and he knew what I meant. And he might do it. He's just a great, great coach. I got lots of stories. When I think of Tom, I always think of his infamous callous disregard for the football remark. Is he dropped that one on you guys yet?
No, I haven't heard that one actually.
Oh, and he was famous in Jacksonville for his quote callous disregard for the football, which is how he described a fumble.
Well, he still puts an emphasis on fumbles, I'll tell you that. That he hasn't lost.
Callous disregard.
Wow. Interesting stuff. Well, Vic Hetchman of Packers.com. Vic, greatly appreciate the time. Really appreciate the insight. Thanks so much.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Vic Hetchman of Packers.com breaking down the Green Bay Packers, who are 7-3 in first place in the NFC North, a tie for first with the Chicago Bears as the Bears fell to the San Francisco 49ers, giving his take as Green Bay and New York get set to collide on Sunday. We're going to get back to your phone calls for the duration of the show here on Big Blue Kickoff. Lance Meadow with you, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. We go to Jeff in New Jersey. Jeff, what's happening?
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, I hear you, Jeff. What you got?
Oh, okay. All right. How are you doing? I just have a couple of issues.
Sure.
And my issue is going to be real quick. David Dill, he is, you know, I am loyal to my team, and I love longevity with the players, but he's playing terrible on that side. He's getting pushed back so easily, it's ridiculous. I'm done with that. Second, I don't know. You see how Drew Brees is so effective? Because he kills teams' defense with short passing. I don't know why the Giants do more short passes. Like let's say third and five. he kills every team. Short pass, short pass, short pass. And soon enough, when he's in the red zone, touchdown. That's why Drew Brees. I don't know why Giants should do it more often. I think we'd be more effective with that. And my last, we need to use Bennett more often. I know, you know, they're trying to use him more as blocking, but I think he is our secret weapon. I think we need to use him, short passes, and put Locklear back in the spot so we could win the last six games. And that's my issue. I have nothing else to say. I love your show. And please, if you can relay that to the team, that would be much of a good favor for me.
All right, Jeff.
Short passes, fellas. Let's go Big Blue.
All right, appreciate the phone call, and thanks so much for listening here on Big Blue Kickoff. All right, Jeff threw out a couple of different things. Let me just briefly touch on each one of them. I had mentioned about Martellus Bennett earlier in the show, so I agree. I think that he can be that red zone target. He really jumped right out of the gates to start the season, if you recall. The first three contests, then all of a sudden, and Kevin Gilbride touched on this, defenses started to take notice. So all of a sudden, Martellus Bennett is getting a lot more attention than he did over the first three games. They're banging bodies at the line of scrimmage now. Bennett can't jump off the line anymore. So he has had to adjust throughout the last couple of weeks. Number two, he had the knee injury. That affected his production. But moving forward, we had a call earlier, and we had a lot of calls yesterday about Ramsey's Barden being an X factor, specifically in the red zone. I think the Giants have an every down player in Martellus Bennett. It's just a matter of having him react to now how defenses are drawing more attention to him. Number two was about David Deal, and this has been another big topic of discussion. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for David Deal. He's had a rough go the last couple of weeks. They felt that he was making enough progress while he played that swing tackle that they were ready to give him back his usual job because the Giants' philosophy, you can't lose your starting job due to injury. And Deal has not necessarily been able to come back and play at the level in which he has been used to doing seasons prior. Perhaps that is something that they looked at over the last 2 weeks. Maybe mix and match Locklear. Maybe make a change in the lineup. That's all speculation at this point. There has been nothing definitive that the Giants have said. Tom Coughlin hasn't touched on anything yesterday when he spoke to reporters. Perhaps he may give a little bit of an inkling on Wednesday, but right now there is no indication that they're going to change up the offensive line. Locklear, though, keep in mind, has not necessarily been a huge bonus in getting that running game going. So, you know, it's a catch-22 almost. Each of these offensive linemen have their strength. The other thing to keep in mind with the struggles of the right side, remember, Snead wasn't healthy leading into the bye. He was clearly not 100% against the Bengals. That hurt him. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. Well, you know, where should we start? I'll just say, first of all, you know, I was glad to see that where everybody's coming back and getting healthy. And that's obviously, that's the key to any team's success, you know, here on the stretch and trying to make a playoff run. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to, you know, to get healthier. But what concerns me, I know I heard one caller earlier say about, you know, Eli and highballs. That has always been a concern. And, you know, in my humble opinion, I think that really what kept Shockey hurt a lot of times. And I'm just wondering if that will ever, ever get addressed, because that is a problem. It's been a problem for all our receivers. He's always throwing high, period. I mean, you know, it's no ifs and ands. I mean, it's because he throws off his back foot a lot. And, you know, it just does, you know, I don't know if it's because of pressure there, but I feel like the offensive line is actually doing a great job with the pass blocking. I think he has plenty of time. I don't know why he doesn't just throw the ball away more often, or why he doesn't dump it off to shorter passes like everybody is saying. You know, it just seems that, you know, the mentality is what really concerns me with the Giants. And, you know, it starts with Kevin Gilbride. I think that the attitude, when you don't have a leader on the field that we really need offensively or defensively, a real prominent leader, you know, to develop our attitude, then we really need to come from somebody. And, you know, with Kevin Gilbride, in my opinion, the best defense is offense for us. And the attitude of the offense is really not there. I mean, I don't, you know, I hear a lot of excuses about, oh, well, they're on to, you know, to Bennett now. All of a sudden, you know, what happened to imposing our will, getting our identity, imposing our will on the team, letting our offense, you know, set the tempo for our defense, giving our defense a time to rest, you know, praise guys when they come back, getting them pumped up and ready to go, getting the defense ready, you know, to go back on the field rested, you know, rather than just playing this scared ball, you know, throwing the ball, you know, when we should be running the ball. I mean, it just seems that the mentality of the team is what concerns me. I love our team, you know, with my whole heart. And, you know, taking my son to the first game he's ever gone to against the Redskins on the 5th, can't wait. You know, and but, you know, what concerns me, I'm just wondering if you guys not see what, you know, what I see as far as the attitude is just not there. And we're, you know, imposing our will, and we know we got to run the ball. You know, plain and simple, Bennett should be, our tight end should be definitely in the play. You know, I hope we see a whole lot more of Brown. You know, it's a shame that Hakeem was not resting last, you know, against the Bengals when he should have been resting. I'm just wondering, you know, what's going on, because it seems that, you know, certain players should be playing, you know, these younger guys. And lastly, I'll leave it with this. You know, Stevie Brown has done a great job, and I love Kenny Phillips, but I hope it doesn't mess up the chemistry. We lack chemistry because we lack confidence, and that's really the only thing we really lack is confidence in imposing our will. And I just want to know if you guys really just touch on the psychological part of the team, if you will. Thanks, you guys, for doing a great job. I appreciate you taking my crazy call.
Well, no,
thanks,
Steve, I appreciate the call, but I want to keep you on the line for a second, because I just want to throw one question your way. You're talking about the attitude and the vocal leadership, and I understand where you're coming from, but don't you feel like a player like Ahmad Bradshaw has brought that to the table with some of his energy earlier in the season?
Well, yeah, I have, but I mean, it's, you know, sometimes, you know, I would have to agree with that. You know, I mean, I love him. I love Ahmad, you know, but I just don't think he gets enough touches, you know, at the appropriate time, as well as Brown. And I'm just, you know, I just don't think it's enough. You know, I think we need somebody on the defense, you know, specifically. You know, I would love to see it be Justin Tuck or, you know, Linval Joseph and Michael Boley are really the only guys who stop the run. And that really comes, you know, with attitude. You know, and I know Kenny Phillips, you know, I love his play, his physicality of the game, but we lack physicality, especially on the, you know, the defensive line, you know, as far as stopping the run in our linebackers, you know, obviously, which is, to me, the elephant in the room is the linebacking core. And, you know, Michael Boley, you know, I don't really haven't seen much of Rivers, so I really can't say what he's going to do. I know he's hurt every 5 minutes, but I'm just, you know, wondering where the attitude is going to come from, and, you know, when we're just going to stick with what we actually do, you know, and that's run the ball control, because if we try to get out there and sling the ball against Aaron Rodgers, we were going to lose that. Every game we won, we've had a way less time of possession than the other team. You know, I'd like to see us get back to the way we played the Browns.
All right, Steve, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And you're right. Time of possession has been a big issue in terms of the disparity in how long the Steelers and the Bengals had the football compared to the Giants. Now, it wasn't such a big gap between the Bengals and the Giants as it was between the Steelers and the Giants, but that was because the Giants were playing comeback late in the game and they had some lengthy possessions that didn't necessarily produce points when it was all said and done. But the offense has to step up. And Steve touched on that. They've got to put together sustainable drives, because I would even take it a step further. He talked about the best defense is your offense. It's going to be key come Sunday against the Green Bay Packers. The best way to beat Aaron Rodgers, keep him off the field. That's how you beat Aaron Rodgers. It's not by making sure that he can have a 3-and-out so that your defense can stop him and contain him. Make it easy on your defense. And the way you do that is get your offense to click so you can put together a 15-play, 80-yard drive or whatever it is and take 7 minutes off the clock. That, to me, is the most effective way that the Giants can slow down two prolific offenses that they're going to be seeing in the next 3 weeks, the Packers and the Saints. You don't want to get into a shootout, because that's going to ultimately put more pressure on your defense. Now, I think the defense will improve, because I think the healthy bodies that they're getting back are game changers. Kenny Phillips and Jaquan Williams, and I talked about the two, what they bring to the table already. Now, Steve also was bringing up, he was concerned it may ruin the chemistry when you bring Kenny Phillips back? How much playing time now does Stevie Brown get? But I'm going to keep turning back to, if they can get this three safety alignment in, I don't see Kenny Phillips taking playing time away from Stevie Brown. You just hope that if they put the three safeties in and somebody needs to take that corner slot position, and Antro Roll has had the most experience in that position, that he can get back to how effective he was in seasons prior. Because Jaron Hosley has struggled, which is understandable. It's a rookie learning curve. They get three safeties in there. You can have a safety matchup on a linebacker. That, I think, could be a safety, excuse me, matchup on a tight end. You can also have a linebacker matchup on a tight end. And some of the safeties that the Giants could throw out there can match up on a wide receiver, specifically Antrell Roll, who's done that. That gives them more versatility. The third point that Steve was touching on, and a couple of other callers we've had, and maybe we haven't really spoke about this so much in the past couple of weeks, and it seems that this is a topic of discussion ever since Antonio Pierce left this football team. And I'll take your thoughts on Twitter, too, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me, at Lance Meadow, last name M-E-D-O-W. Have the Giants been missing a vocal leader on defense? Because I think Ahmad Bradshaw brings something to the table on offense since Antonio Pierce left. Steve brought up Justin Tuck. He's admitted that he doesn't like that role as a vocal leader. And I'm not saying that he doesn't do what he has to in the locker room. You know, we're not behind closed doors. We don't know what side conversations players have. But in terms of the media presence, he's admitted that he doesn't like to have that role as the big macho vocal leader that needs to make his presence felt specifically around reporters. Maybe he does that behind closed doors. Pierce made it known. He didn't hide it. I don't know if the Giants necessarily have a personality on this team. But I'll tell you one thing. They've got playmakers on this team. And to me, that's what matters. You could have a player that could stir the pot, give the most motivational speech known to man. You could have a great coach who knows how to turn the key in the ignition. At the end of the day, these guys need to make plays. And that's been absent the last two games. Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got Alex in Connecticut. Alex, what's happening?
Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Alex. What you got?
I think that the Giants need to get off to a really fast start. I feel like if we don't get off to a fast start, then the Packers are just going to run us out of the building. I mean, you know, the Cleveland game got off to a really slow start. We've been doing it all year. Dallas, same thing. I just feel like if the Packers have the opportunity to, you know, step on the gas, they're not going to let up. I mean, we kind of took that Super Bowl away from them last year. They were 15-1. They were supposed to be the champs. And I think they still remember that game, and they really want to get some revenge on us. So I just feel like if the Giants win the coin toss in the beginning of the game, we need to receive it, we need to go down, and we need to score right away. Because, like you said, if we get into a shootout with them, I don't think that we have a shot.
And last season, if you recall, Alex, the Giants did get off to a fast start against the Packers. Remember, Travis Beckham had that early touchdown. The Giants had the ball first, and it seemed as if they fed off of that early possession because they were in a position to potentially win that game if they make a defensive stop and Mason Crosby's not in position for that game-winning field goal. So I agree with you. I think if they could set the tempo early, that can really be a big benefit for them for the rest of the way.
That's what we need to do, and we need to run the ball, like you said, and keep the ball out of Rodgers' hands. Like, you know, back in the day when Belichick used to beat Peyton Manning all the time, he did it by keeping Peyton off the field, by running the ball, and that's what we need to do. I mean, and if Bradshaw's not working, then we need to go to the hot hand. We need Brown or Wilson. We just need to keep running the ball if we get an early lead, and then I think we'll be all right. But, you know, if the Packers come out to a hot start and, you know, Pierre Paul and OC and Tuck, we're not getting pressure on them. I think we're just going to get beat up in this game. And I really hope that's not the case because we need this win, especially with, you know, the schedule the way it is, you know, after this game. We need to win this game. We need to get a good tone for the rest of the season, for the last six games. And I just feel like the start of the game is going to be pivotal in the outcome of the game.
Absolutely. And appreciate the phone call, Alex. And he's right. You know, this game, forget the six-game stretch. Forget what's at stake later on in the season. This game is key because the Giants are coming off a two-game skid. They've had 2 weeks to get guys healthy. You want to set the tone. You want to set the tempo for the stretch run. That's why this game is so key. You want to see them make progress with respect to their offense, in getting the running game going, Eli Manning gaining some more continuity with his receivers, and on defense, getting back to that opportunistic play where they were stockpiling on the turnovers, getting to the quarterback. That's what's at play this Sunday, righting the ship. That's what needs to be the theme, getting back to Giants football, what they set the tone with to start this season. And I just want to get back, before we bring in John Schmelk here, who will provide some extra nuggets and stats about the Green Bay Packers, which we always look forward to every Tuesday, about the time of possession, because I threw out earlier in the show, the best way to beat the Green Bay Packers is keep Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines. And that's been an issue, time of possession, the last couple of games, most notably against the Steelers. Pittsburgh had the football 35 minutes and 15 seconds. Giants had it for 24:45. That's a problem. If you give Aaron Rodgers the football for 11 more minutes than Eli Manning, that's not a recipe for victory. Now, the disparity in the time of possession between the Giants and Bengals wasn't as big as I bring up the numbers, but you have to keep in mind, as I said, Cincinnati did so much of its damage early on when it had the football and capitalized from short yardage situations because of the Giants' turnovers. But I'll bring up the numbers here for time of possession against the Cincinnati Bengals. And this was Andy Dalton, who had the football for 30 minutes and 15 seconds. Giants wound up with it 29:45. There was more of a balance, but remember, you have to take into consideration the flow of the game, and those early turnovers just shot the Giants right in the foot, and they were not able to recover. And the last thing you want to do is spot Aaron Rodgers' favorable field position. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We will take your phone calls for the final few minutes left here on the show. But first, we bring in my partner in crime, John Schmelk.
Hello.
How are we doing, John?
I'm doing okay.
So what do you got?
Sore. I'm okay.
A little sore. That's right. Well, we should, you know, get off topic a bit. Most Giants fans do not realize that.
Well, I'm not sure if they want to know about this.
Well, we got to give an opportunity, and I'm still a little bit bitter because I didn't have an opportunity to suit up. So perhaps.
Could have used you.
I would have gone out there and, you know, run some decent routes, maybe hooked up for a touchdown. But anyway, the Giants played the Jets media. Is that the best way to characterize them or no?
It was more like, I think, Giants employees versus Jets employees rather than necessarily media.
And a touch football game.
Correct.
At MetLife Stadium.
That's also correct.
So let's hear a little recap, a little breakdown, a synopsis.
All right. I'll break it down very quickly. Early on in the game, we drove the ball down the field a couple times, had some struggles in the red zone, had trouble getting the ball into
the end zone.
Sounds like the Giants. Their size at the line of scrimmage gave our quarterback some problems early on getting the ball over them. They had like 6'3", 6'4", guys.
But a two-man rush, correct?
Two-man rush, okay. Correct. So, unfortunately,
I looked at the rules.
Unfortunately, early on, we went down. We were basically down 21-0 about what, halfway through the game, you'd say? Halfway, three-fifths through the game, 60%. Changed quarterbacks up a little bit, scored two straight, got down seven, gave a one big deep play. That was really the backbreaker. That set them up for a touchdown. That put them up two scores. Scored one more touchdown, then the clock just ran out. We ran out of time at the end of the game. So
35 minutes you had? Running clock?
No. I think it was 35 minutes running clock. I tried to do my best Eli Manning impression at the end of the game. I just ran out of time trying to bring the team back. I tried.
So
Papa played well. Tad, our intern, played pretty good. Merrill had a touchdown.
Nice.
You know, we played okay.
Did the guru get the best fantasy game? Who had the best stats if you were to start in your
Tad.
Lineup?
Tad, who's our pure intern, the kid's 6'5".
Wow.
And he can jump.
There you go.
He can basically jump. You can't
what
teach
What do you
height.
Can't teach height? There you
no,
go.
No, but honestly,
money
it's
line.
Funny. It's actually hilarious. So we had a fourth down in the red zone towards the end of the game, and nobody was getting open. And he's sitting there in the corner. I go, you know what? It's Barden time. And I just threw it high in the air towards the corner. He went up and he got it. So he's a former Division II basketball player. So he knows how to go up, get the ball like a rebound. So,
but not Cal Poly, though.
No.
He had no time there.
No. All right, do you want to get
yes,
some nuggets
Yes, I'm ready.
Here?
I am waiting.
All right, big picture-wise, I'll do that first before I get into more specific nuggets. First, I'll start on the Packers' offense. They don't make the same number of big plays that they used to. They used to be a big play offense. Really, not so much this year. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of their issues they've had trying to protect Aaron Rodgers. That being said, in their last five games, the Packers obviously have won five straight. They've scored 24 or more in each one of those wins. They're averaging 32 points per game over that stretch. Aaron Rodgers is in a hot streak in those five games, 17 touchdowns, just two interceptions. So that's obviously pretty phenomenal. They've won 26 of their last 28 when they've won or been even in the turnover battle. So that's a pretty big stat.
And that hurt them in the playoff loss last year.
They're the only team with three wide receivers that have 40 or more catches. That would, of course, be James Jones, Randall Cobb, and Jordy Nelson.
Spreads the word.
23 touchdowns, I think that says, if I read my own handwriting, from the wide receiver position. That's most in the NFL. They have the eighth, like I was saying before, the eighth fewest plays in the league, only 34 of 20-plus yards, which you would think the Packers, that's a pretty low number. Their longest play, believe it or not, has come from their tight end Crabtree on a 48-yard catch over the middle. They're very poor on first down, just 27th in the league, averaging just an average first yards gained on first down. Very good in the red zone, 68% in the red zone. That's second best in the NFL. They're also very good scoring outside the red zone. I can go through these great Aaron Rodgers stats. One bad one, he has been sacked 32 times this year, which is the most of any quarterback in the NFL. Randall Cobb has really stepped up this year. He's been fantastic. Jordy Nelson is back from that injury. He's been good. And James Jones, he used to have all the drop problems. He's really seemed to have gotten over that, and he's been very good. They can go no huddle at any time. They like to speed up the tempo a little bit. James Starks kind of took back over as a number one running back last week. And again, Randall Cobb's really been there, has been their biggest player on offense. He'll line up in the backfield, he'll line up outside, he'll run some gadget stuff, he'll run the ball, he'll catch it. Their real weakness on the offensive line, is their offensive line. They give up those 32 sacks, and to me, this is both ways, and I'll get to the defense in a second, but specifically for the Giants, this is a defensive line game for them. If the Giants' defensive line can get to pressure, harass, you know, take Aaron Rodgers out of rhythm, they could win this game. If the defensive line doesn't, I find it very hard to believe that the Giants can do enough in their defensive backfield to slow down a Packer team that has this many weapons. You got to get to the quarterback. That's how you stop the Green Bay Packers. As for the Packers' defense, they are much improved from last season. And a lot of it has to do with their young players. Their first six draft picks this year are all on the defensive side of the ball. An undrafted rookie also gets a decent amount of playing time there. And one of their plans this year was to get those young players as much time early in the season on the field. So when you get into the home stretch here, these guys are going to be ready to play. And they're improving as the season goes along. I mean, you can go through some of these guys. Casey Hayward's been a big difference maker in the secondary. He has five interceptions. Yeah. He's played slot. He's played outside, and he's just gaining more and more confidence as the season goes along. MD Jennings has been very good at safety. He's been a playmaker. He had that interception last week against Detroit.
And returned it for a touchdown.
Exactly. He's been very good. Desmond Moses, he's stepped in for Casey Matthews, and he's done a very, very good job at that linebacker spot, rushing the passer. So their young players have played a lot. Clay Matthews, excuse me, Casey's his brother, obviously. But they've done a very good job rushing the passer. And the young guys have just made a huge difference in this defense. And the way they've really done it, they've used these young players to reduce the snap count from some of their veterans. So these guys are better later in the game. Sam Shields has come back from injury. That'll help them in the back end. Their safeties, who were a weakness, they've really had trouble making up for Mark Collins, who obviously had a career-ending neck injury a couple years ago.
And they're missing Charles Woodson.
He was a very, very, not Mark Collins. What was his first name?
Nick Collins.
Mark Collins, the former Giant, obviously. Nick Collins, their safety back there with that neck injury, they finally kind of recovered from that. They're better. They're pretty good in the back end. And, you know, talking to people that have looked at the Packers extensively, you got to beat them by running the football. So when I say it's a game up front for the Giants, their offensive line has to win against the Packers' defense, and their defensive line has to win against the Packers' offensive line. And where the Packers really succeed on defense is pass rush. They are second, I believe, in the league in sacks. They have 32 sacks, I believe, on the air. I got that number here somewhere. I'll find it. But they succeed on defense by getting to the quarterback, and that's really where they've had a lot of success. Now, obviously, With Clay Matthews being hurt, he accounts for, I think, a third of their pressure in terms of quarterback hits,
hurries, sacks,
things like that. So they think, or at least I would think, he's going to be back this week. He's already been out longer than they would have thought with the hamstring. They had the bye. They had the Lions game. My guess is that he'll be play this week, but keep an eye on practice. That's obviously going to be a huge injury to keep an eye on this week. Number two overall, 33 sacks this season. They have allowed four 100-yard games on the ground this year in terms of rushing. They have 16 takeaways, eighth in the league, 12 interceptions, sixth in the league. They have guys in the defensive backfield that can make plays on the ball and get touchdowns, whether it's Tremont Williams, I mentioned M.D. Jennings, I mentioned Casey Hayward, Burnett, their other safety, Shields is a veteran corner as well. So they have guys in the defensive backfield that can make plays, and really, they have guys all over the field, whether it's pass rushers or guys in the defensive backfield, that can make plays. 25 of their sacks that come from the linebacker spots. They have five guys with two or more sacks. So a lot of different guys can make plays, and there are a lot of young guys that are getting better. So the Packer offense, not quite as explosive as it was last year, but their defense has improved an awful lot. So to me, Lance, this game's on the D-line. It's on the O-line. Run the football. Protect Eli Manning. And on the other side of the ball, get to Aaron Rodgers. Disrupt that Packers passing game. And the Giants would have a good chance of winning. If they don't do those things, though, it's going to be really tough.
Well, that's why this game is going to be such an important test, because they have not won the battle at the line of scrimmage, John, the last few games.
Yep.
So this is going to be an opportunity for them to put the struggles behind them and create a new chapter of the season.
Hey, look, the one consistent thing we heard from the assistant coaches last week when they talked about the struggles of Eli Manning, the struggles of the offense, they talked about how teams are playing safeties deep. And the way they're playing the Giants is that we're going to challenge you to run the football. And I know a lot of people complain, oh, you know, Bradshaw, the balance wasn't good. They didn't have enough carries. Well, the Giants try to run the ball early and often in all these games. They try to get consistent in the running game. The problem is when you're only gaining 2 or 3 yards per carry, you can't just keep running the ball into the line, running the ball into the line. It's counterproductive. You're hurting your offense over, and eventually you have to pass it. The perfect example last week, that Cowboys-Browns game, all right? In the first half, the Cowboys tried to be balanced. They tried to run with Felix Jones. They tried to move the ball that way. In the second half, they went to the locker room and they said, this, you know what, ain't working. So what are we going to do? We're going to give the ball to Tony Romo and let him go to work. And that's the same type, and that's how they beat the Browns. Romo finished with like 350 yards, you know, through the air. And that's what the Giants, time and time again, in my opinion this year, have had to do. It's not by choice. They've had to do it because the running game just simply isn't getting the job done. And it's got to get going this week against Green Bay. Interesting nugget. Against Detroit last week, the Packers didn't play base defense once.
Wow.
The whole game. They were in nickel as their base, and they played a lot of dime. So it was all nickel, all dime. That's why LeSure had 100 yards on the ground, and that's the type of thing the Giants will have to take advantage of this week. And that Casey Hayward-Victor Cruz matchup in the slot could be a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and the other thing to take note from the Cowboys-Browns game that you brought up a good point, Dallas also noticed that the Browns were without their top corner, Joe Hayden.
Joe Hayden did not
play. So, of course, they all of a sudden in the second half started to go to the air. The Giants now could look at it, if Clay Matthews doesn't play for some reason, and we don't know.
Right.
And Vic Ketchman said Mike McCarthy's not really hinting at all. But B.J. Raji's also question mark.
Yeah,
top nose tackle.
He re-injured his ankle, which was bothering him earlier in the year.
And he's good in terms of stopping the run. So if he's not there, I think the Giants need to test right up the gut early. Just to see if they could set the tone, as you mentioned, at the line of scrimmage. And the other thing to throw into play, if they do continue to run into a wall, and we've gotten a lot of calls on this topic, John, you know, the short passes is another option to continue to move the chains. And you even mentioned this on yesterday's show. Yeah. There was a glimpse of that against the Bengals.
Sure.
They were using Akeem Nicks on some slants, and that seemed to move the chains.
And they got Andre Brown involved in the passing game, too, in that contest, and I think that was part of it. And I think you'd like to see Martellus Bennett get more involved in that short passing game, too. We talked about this on the shows last week. Coach Pope saying Martellus Bennett having some trouble at the line of scrimmage, beating press coverage, beating bump and run. Well, he's got to get better at that. He's got to run the right routes. He's got to catch the ball. He's had a number, in my opinion, of very catchable balls that he hasn't come up with. And quite frankly, these were the knocks that were on Martellus Bennett when he was in Dallas. That's why they didn't spend the money to re-sign him. And I think you're seeing some of those things pop up here with the Giants now. So all these things have to get better. The Giants are coming off a bye. They have the advantage, which is something they're not going to be able to say the next 2 weeks. Think about this. When they play Washington next week, The Redskins will have 10 days off before that Giants game because they play on Thanksgiving. The following week, they play the Saints. The Saints will also have
because they play the Thursday game against the Falcons, and the Giants will be on Monday night. Very interesting.
The Saints will also have a long rest for that game. So they will be at a disadvantage in terms of rest against Washington and New Orleans. So this is a week where, you know, the Giants are coming off the bye. You got to take advantage of that extra rest, that extra time to prepare, and really take it to a Packers team that is getting healthier but are still a little banged up.
Before we wrap things up, sure. I just want to pose one question to you, and this was also brought up earlier on the show, and it seems ever since Antonio Pierce left this team, you get the question, who is the vocal leader
we're back on
defense?
On this now.
Well, it was a big topic today. And really? I thought maybe I'd get an opinion on this topic.
Who do I think it is, or do I think there's a problem?
Well, both. Is there somebody there right now, and is it a problem because maybe it's lacking?
Well, I think Justin Tuck is the leader on defense, for one. I mean, if you were to pick who's the leader on defense, to me, it's Justin Tuck.
Well, because he has the title. But
I just think he takes that title
and deliver with it.
I think Justin Tuck is more the steadying voice to try. When things start going bad, he's the guy that kind of keeps things together and keeps things calm. If you're looking for a guy that fires people up, I think Chase Blackburn's also a guy like Tuck that'll go on the sideline and kind of keep everything under control, keep guys on the same page, try to communicate. If things go wrong, he'll bring guys aside, try to talk to them. I think in the secondary, I think Corey Webster does that too. When things go wrong, he'll bring them together. Antrell Roll, to a certain extent, I think is more of an emotional leader than anything else because he can get pretty fired up during the course of the game. But do they have that Antonio Pierce-type player? Probably not, but do you have to have an Antonio Pierce-type player? I don't know if you do.
Listen, it's all about execution.
Exactly.
I've said you can have the best inspirational speeches known to man. It doesn't matter in the end.
When the defense played their rear ends off the last six games of last year, final two in the regular season, the four in the playoffs, I didn't see a leadership problem with the defense then.
And I think it also was because they got healthy at the right time and maybe OC's arrival.
Sure.
Made things click. So who's to say maybe Kenny Phillips returns, Jaquan Williams comes back? Perhaps. I mean, maybe it's a stretch.
But here's the problem. To me, and I think you'll agree with this, the reason the defense turned it around the last six games last year was because the pass rush made a reappearance. And quite frankly, the Giants, other than Chris Canty, who is not known for his pass rushing anyway, more of a two-way player, he can do both. He can stop the run and get after the passer, but he's not a pass rush specialist per se, and he's a tackle. The Giants have been pretty darn healthy this year in terms of their primary pass rushers. Kiwanuka, Umanura, Jason Pierre-Paul, and Justin Tuck.
The injuries have come to the second.
Not one of those four guys have even appeared on an injury report this year. Not probable, not questionable, nothing. Those guys have been healthy and played every single week. All right? And the pass rush hasn't been there. At least where I think a lot of people think it can be and where they need it to be.
Well, the positive is, and we talked about this yesterday, if you look on paper at the next six matchups, the Giants, to me, are going against teams that are not very good at stopping the run. They're also going against some suspect offensive lines, John. Redskins have been banged up.
They don't pass it a lot, though. They will run the ball like crazy against you if they can.
But the Packers, clearly, Brian Bulaga, the loss of him,
I think has affected
them. The Saints lost Carl Nixon free agency. They're trying to fill the gap there. And the Ravens, because of their running game, I think the offensive line has been a contributing factor as to maybe not necessarily opening up as many holes.
And the Eagles' offensive line's a mess.
So there you go. So maybe this is the stretch.
That's fair.
That things could start to click.
And, of course, when you're going against teams that are going to pass the ball more, and that's one thing we've talked about a lot this year, the Giants are getting into the quote-unquote passing part of their schedule now. They've gone through the early part of the season where they've had some easier quarterbacks to go up against, whether it was, you know, Brandon Whedon, or, you know, guys like that. And even Andy Dalton, even Dalton to a certain extent.
Josh Freeman, they don't have
quite
good a top track
quarterback.
Records.
No, Freeman has had well, this having a very
but this
good
season,
year.
Though.
Correct.
In the past.
Those guys are not in the same categories as the Matt Ryans, the Aaron Rodgers, the Drew Breeses. And think about it. The one quarterback, and we said this before, they really play in the first half. That's a established top passing quarterback, Tony Romo. And what did Tony Romo do against them in those two games? Ate the Giants alive. So,
even
the pass
the
rush,
turnovers.
Exactly. The pass rush better step it up. Because, quite frankly, I mean, this is over a 2 or 3 year period now since Perry Fuel has been the defensive coordinator. This Giants defense is not successful if they don't get pass pressure. It's just not. That's how it's designed. And that's fine. it's won Super Bowls. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's the deal. You don't pressure the quarterback, you're not going to get stops, especially against big-time quarterbacks like Rodgers, Breeze, Ryan, even Flacco.
And from the short-term perspective, you're going up against a team that's given up 32 sacks, as you laid out.
Yep.
It's a nice feast that can be had in a post-Thanksgiving meal on Sunday.
You know, it's like everyone gets the Thanksgiving leftovers. They get, like, you know, the turkey on the sandwich with the gravy, the little moist maker in the middle. It's good times.
Could be a big appetite that the Giants could work up come Sunday.
Yeah, no question.
We'll leave it at that. All right, Anita Marks, Paul Dottino with you the next 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. John Schmoke and I back on Friday to – no, Thursday, excuse me. That's right, as John laid out yesterday.
Well,
we don't work on Thanksgiving.
I also made the mistake yesterday of saying we did. So
I made the mistake again. Yes. There you go. Yeah. So Wednesday,
yes.
Anita Marks and
Paul
Dottino. Friday, after skipping over Thursday, we want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving.
Of course.
And a safe holiday, and we'll continue to preview the Giants-Packers game leading up to Sunday.
Hopefully people on Friday morning will be in good mood, a little fat and happy, people not having to work on Friday. I want to get some nice optimistic Giant fan calls in on Friday morning for Thanksgiving. That's all I'm saying.
There you go. That's what we got to be thankful for.
And no fantasy update from Melroy today. I mean, come on.
Oh, in terms of the
the league.
Well, let's put it this way: you just want to hear whether or not you won, so you can, well, you know.
I did have Andre Johnson.
Boost the ego a little.
That doesn't hurt.
We'll leave it in suspense from the next couple of days.
Talking to Anita, from what I understand, she had a rough week, and she was the one closest to me in second place. So I'm thinking that I might have further expanded my league in the fantasy, which I also did last night in the pick segment.
Yes,
Lance all
yes.
over those Chicago Bears, which ended up being an absolute disaster area for
well,
him.
Well, here's my question. Can somebody tell me what happened to the Bears'
I
defense?
Don't know.
Because
I
it did
no
not
answer.
Show up yesterday.
No, it was bizarre.
Did they go to Minnesota? Did they go south to Florida? Where's the Bears' defense? I'm still looking for them.
It's honestly, I couldn't. I missed the first, you know, quarter and a half. I was doing something else. I got home, and I went to turn on the game. It's 20-0. I'm like, I don't have to watch this. This is over because I know Jason Campbell isn't going to be able to bring the Bears back in this game. He got the crap beat out of him.
Yeah.
The 49er defensive front showed why they're the best defensive front in football. You know, and I get Kaepernick making some big plays down the field. We talked about his big playability yesterday. How about the fact that they were able to run the ball consistently on the Bears defense with Frank Gore?
Well, that's a big troubling aspect now because Arian Foster did it last week. And a couple of games
Chris
earlier.
Johnson, a couple games
so
earlier, had
that's
the one
been a
big
trend.
Run.
And the Bears have been great at preventing a 100-yard rusher.
Well,
now
here's
all
the
of a
thing.
Sudden, it's a field day.
And the Bears should be a team you can run against because the way they run that Tampa 2 coverage that they always run, those two safeties are deep. So they try to stop the run with their front seven. So if you can, you know, power in there a little bit and beat that front seven, you know, Urlacher's a little older. Season goes along, he wears
Lance
down.
Briggs
Lance
Briggs,
a little bit older. As the season goes along, he wears down a little bit. I think the Bears, the way they run their defense, you should be able to power the run against them just a little bit.
And it was so painful on many levels. Just number one, it wasn't a very enjoyable football
game. And
Brandon
Marshall didn't have a big game either.
Well, he did catch a late touchdown, but it was not enough. So I'll have to regroup. Always sets the tone when you lose in fantasy, it seems.
Well, it really is
it
really
week,
is
no?
the most important thing in your
no,
life.
No, well, I
so.
Wouldn't go that far.
Okay,
but
second most important?
Maybe third. Right. We'll settle for third. All right, on that note, special thanks to Vic Ketchman for joining me from Packers.com to break down the Green Bay contest. For John Schmoke, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you later on this week.